This week on the Drag Scene Podcast, Krista Baldwin stocks by to talk about being the daughter of a drag racing great, what it's like to own your own team and drive, and the future of the sport for her team. So, pull those belts tight. Get ready to put in the beam. The Drag Scene Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Drag Scene Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. This week on the show, Krista Baldwin stops by, and it's a great conversation with her just about, you know, her passion for the sport, where she came from, and you get to hear about how she actually got behind the wheel of a race car. It's definitely not your most traditional story on earth, so without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my guest this week on the Drag Scene Podcast is Krista Baldwin. What's going on, Krista?
Hey, how's it going, Brian?
Doing good. Getting ready to wind down 2019 and already looking forward to a big 2020 racing season.
Yeah, I know. This year literally flew by. I can't believe it's December. But then again, it's like we're going to go back racing in about 6 weeks. So, yeah, there's a downtime, but not a lot of downtime.
Yeah, that's. I know I kind of get a giggle out of when everyone says, you know, what are you going to do in the off season? I said, the 2 weeks that I'm not planning anything to do anything racing related, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, coming straight from the PRI show, I mean, just that insanity itself is just, you know, you got to take that hurdle. And then, yeah, in a couple of weeks, we'll be going down to testing. So it's like, what off season?
Yeah, exactly. You know, PRI, you know, is it's a sensory experience just with everything going on there, and it just literally kind of rolls everything from one year into the other. And you know, I think it kind of keeps you fresh and thinking about racing as well.
Yeah, I mean, PRI is the place where you're making those new sponsor changes, you're making the new announcements, new teams, new products, new everything. And so it's a good platform to just go ahead and dive into 2020. But from the looks of it, this PRI, I want to say, is probably one of the busiest PRIs that I've been to. And like, a lot of hope is out there, like a lot of good momentum is rolling through there. And so like, I'm proud to be part of the industry, and you know, like being able to be a part of it, it's been really thrilling, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, I was kind of wondering if I was the only one that noticed just it was volume busy, but it, you know, you kind of saying that also ties into what a few of the companies I talked with all said was there were quality interactions. It wasn't tire kickers. You know, there's a lot of people moving some product at that event.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we're one of them too, especially on the McLeod FTI side. Like we said, this is a show where like people want to know what the newest and greatest thing is for their 2020 program. And so it's just a great platform to do it at.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's, you know, I've never been to SEMA. SEMA's not my bag. PRI is my people. It's the hardcore racing people. That's where I feel at home at.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, kind of speaking of hardcore racers, you know, we were doing a little bit of chatting before the podcast here, and you definitely come from some hardcore racing background for sure, between your dad and your grandfather. You know, they talk about it all the time on NHRA All Access, and then, you know, at the track, you can hear about it. But, you know, your grandfather, the Greek, is probably, you know, considered on many people one of the most influential and definitely old school, you know, top fuel racers there is.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many times when I'm at a show or at a drag race that people come up to me and they're like, your grandpa, like, I've been watching him since the 60s, and he's just an inspiration for, you know, to keep moving. And I'm like, yeah, he's my favorite driver too. And you know, I joke around with them, but no, it's really inspiring that so many people come up to me and they're just like so proud of him. And like, yeah, they know him through like they're his career, but like they don't know him personally like I do. But it's just, it's really like, it's a cool feeling that like everyone knows who your grandpa is.
Oh yeah. And I love old school dudes like that. Warren Johnson, you know, rest in peace, Bob Glidden, guys like that are just, you know, the grizzled old veterans that raced when, you know, these things were, people seem to forget how dangerous drag racing really was back in the day.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, my grandpa built his first dragster like in his garage. Like he welded it together himself. I mean, he was doing things that no one else would be doing, and he was putting things in the tank that were other than nitro, and it gets crazy back in the 60s. But I mean, it's quite amazing because you have like Big Daddy and my grandpa and all the big names that kind of made the sport. And it's like they literally just went in their garage, found what they could, and they run what they brung. You know what I mean? Like it's just insane that our sport has evolved that much over the last 50, 60 years into what it's become today.
Oh yeah, it's insane to think that, top level racers back in the, were all privateers who were building these in their garages and going, that fast compared to what we do now. It's like I tell people, you walk around and look at some of the old nostalgia cars and it's like it's almost barbaric what those guys used to race in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and they would do it in a t-shirt and jeans.
Yeah.
Like there was no fire equipment, no nothing. And they're going down these old highways and these old airstrips with no compound on the track or anything. They just were like, let's see how fast these two cars can go.
Smoking while they're dumping the nitro in, it didn't matter.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it just sometimes I wish I grew up in a different era. I wish I was kind of like back, like just to see what it was like back then. But I'm still very fortunate, like I'm in this era and like the next generation. But like I could just imagine what it was back in the 60s and 70s. Like if like to be a like to be a funny car driver in the 70s, like how cool would that been,
Oh yeah, those guys are like before them the fuel altered racers and what we see now with the outlaw racers, those were the OG, those are the original gangsters. Those were the dudes when they came up, everybody went to the fence line 'cause it's like something's gonna happen. I want to see what's gonna happen.
Exactly. And so it just, I get, like I said, I get a lot of people that come up to me and they're like, man, we've been watching your grandpa since we were kids. And I'm like, yeah, but that's his way of life. That's what he chose to do. And, obviously it worked out for him.
Yeah, and I find it interesting, your dad was a driver as well, and kind of being born into this sport in a certain way. I grew up around bracket racing and whatnot, but I see pictures of me when I was a kid with all these famous drivers, from a fan point of view, from someone that was kind of on the inside of the sport like you were growing up. Are there any like cool pictures you have out there? It's like, oh, just you, your grandpa, maybe like you said, maybe like Big Daddy and a few of these other big names, when you're a little kid, just hanging out with them.
I do have quite a few, of course, but I get the biggest kick is that now all those like awesome racers like Roland Leong and Big Daddy and all those people, they actually come up to me and shake my hand. They're like, oh, we've been watching you since the beginning, like we're really proud of you. And I'm like, oh my God, you know who I
Yeah, that's a
am?
total head trip.
So that's pretty cool. But I mean, I have this one picture. We were in the staging lanes, and it was with me, my dad, and John Force. And John Force actually switched hats with me. So he was wearing like the white butterfly bucket hat or whatever I was wearing that day, and I had his Castrol hat on.
That's
And like,
awesome.
of course, I'm like 5 or 6, right? So I'm like, what is happening? And I'm like holding on to my dad. But like stuff like that is just, it's like, it's crazy. And now like John Force comes up to me and shakes my hand. That's the crazy part of everything. But yeah, there's been quite a few different memories like over the years of just like what's happened. I mean, for instance, this one time, it was back when Spencer Massey was driving for the Snake in the US Smokeless Dragster. And like, I'm not gonna lie, I had quite a little bit of crush on him. He was like my guy. And like Snake comes over to my grandpa. And so my mom, Paula, she says, Snake, my daughter would love to come meet your driver and all this stuff. And of course, Snake takes us on his golf cart and we go over to Spencer's pit. And he gave me like a whole tour and I got to meet Spencer. And now like I'm friends with Spencer. It's so like surreal that like the way everything's turned out. And so like now I'm friends with Spencer. Snake comes up to me and we exchange a few words. So it's like full circle, like I look up to these guys and now I'm like right there with them.
It, for me, I've growing up, you know, watching, you know, some people, you know, watched their favorite NFL team on a, you know, on a Sunday. And, you know, for my family was always watching drag racing, you know, back in the day when it was on the Nashville Network and watching NHRA Today and all that. And to get to meet some of those drivers in a professional capacity and, you know, get to interview them and talk with people, you know, even within the industry like you, it really is. It's hard to explain to people what it's like to kind of go through that where, you know, you just have that moment where you're like, oh, wow, I do this now for a living. And it's really kind of trippy.
It is, and it's like, you know, I go back and look at old videos and stuff, and it's like I am running the same number as like my dad ran in Top Fuel back in the 90s. So it's like I'm like right there with them. Like I'm progressing in my career, but yeah, like you said, it just it's full circle. That's what it is, and it's like I'm just so grateful to be part of this huge organization, this huge family where we can all support each other. So
It makes those extremely long days at PRI worth it when you get to do that
yes.
stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing is like everyone, like they come to me, and of course, I got quite a few projects on my list and a couple of different avenues that I work in. And they're like, why do you work so hard? And I'm like, it's to hit that gas. Like, you don't understand. Like, that is a drug that you cannot get away from.
Oh.
Like, it's horrible.
Oh,
But
it.
I love it so much.
We were. We're. I was driving in my wife's car one day, and she was riding with me. And her car has a shifter where it's got, you know, the little, you know, call, shift on the floor. You engage it into gear. And I'm just driving down the road. Just I keep like letting go of the button on the shifter. And she goes, "What the hell are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm practicing letting go of the button." And I had to explain to her. And she goes, "There's something wrong with you." I'm like, "It's part of the game."
Nope, it's quite normal.
Yeah, I was like that. Yeah, that, it's extremely normal compared to what a lot of my friends do. It's something that once you kind of you just it becomes part of your life and you surround yourself with it. And you know, coming from the background I came from is one way, but then you know, you grew up around Big Show Nitro racing. Kind of what was that like growing up as a kid? You know, being literally in the mix of these events and going to these big races.
You know, I'm like I said, I'm very grateful for the life experience that I've had. And the funniest part is like, of course, like my dad was there and my grandpa, and most of the time we're at the same national event, or we would take a journey over to the AHRA world. But when I was a kid, of course, I'm a kid. I don't know what's really happening. Like, yeah, I know like the cars that they drive and I sit in the cars and stuff, but you know, I wasn't like totally involved. Like I was more like, oh, grandpa's gonna be there. So I have a set of toys in grandpa's trailer and then a set of toys in my dad's trailer. So I would just go back and forth all day and keep switching out the toys that I wanted to play with. Like just keep going back and forth in the pit. So like of course when I was a kid, I loved it, but not as much as I love it now. But you know, you're a kid. Like, how much are you supposed to like it? And but yeah, like just growing up in that, like, I'm not gonna lie, I'm very prejudiced about the nitro cars. Like, I think that's the racing, and everyone tries and convince me like, oh, well, you should go try bracket racing or something like that. I'm like, I just, you know what? I grew up here. This is where I want to be. So, and there's no disrespect to anyone else. I mean, the whole thing is that if you are taking your journey down the racetrack, like good for you. Like you are doing something that you love, or you're knocking something off of your lifetime list or whatever it may be. Like good for you. You are doing something that you're passionate about, and that's all that matters.
Oh yeah, anything going down a drag strip is, you know, great in my opinion. I you know, in the when I really started to get more back into, you know, racing when I was in college and cars, it was, you know, back when the Fast and the Furious came out. You know, me being raised around V8 domestic cars, imports were the devil. And you know, now that I look back on it, you know, now I get some of the experience that I have. They're well-built imports are a very awesome thing, and I don't discriminate against any form of motorsports, but you know, like you said, it's kind of where you came from and what you grew up around, and it drives you to want to be a part of it more and more.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, before I started at McLeod, I didn't know a lot on the import side. You know, I just didn't know anything over there. But now that like because of McLeod, I'm able to broaden my horizons. And so I think that's a really key part in our industry is that, yeah, you might have the one thing that you love, but you just got to be mindful of everything else and be like, oh, what is this part of the market doing to better our industry? And maybe they'll do something different than we are, or whoever's doing it. And so it just, you gotta broaden your horizons, you gotta respect everyone. And I think that's what a lot of people do with us.
Oh yeah, I tell people that, there's certain events that you need to have on your bucket list when it comes to drag racing, or some style of, you need to go to a big no prep race, you need to go a big outlaw race, you need to go, to a big NHRA race, and big money bracket race just to see the sheer precision of those drivers. And I tell people that you got to go to the World Cup. That's one of those events that it's an event. And it's an experience like nothing you're ever going to see, from the crowd size to the cars. It's insane. I've been at that event for media, helping put on a speed video, being a crew person, and it's the only event that I've ever been to when the radio car that we're crewing on and racing, when it's spooling up, that I hear the crowd over the car. That's insane.
Yeah, that is crazy. I mean, we like as McLeod, we're a part of World Cup as well. And my counterpart Joe actually goes for us because that's always the weekend of the Vegas National event. So Paul or I are not able to make it over there. But no, it just the sheer like brilliance of imports versus domestics. Like, okay, obviously that's going to be a huge thing, but like just the sheer marketing that the Miller brothers put on, it's huge.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It's absolutely huge.
And the thing is, they back it up with what you see on the track. It is an 8-ring circus with the 9th ring being built in the pits as we speak. And just
Yes.
seeing those cars, like imports, domestics, both, just seeing the records and how impressive those cars are, to me, it's awesome to see, just because you get to see so much cool stuff in one weekend. And it's very rare to be able to go to an event to see, it's for, I guess the closest thing to it, to make a to draw a line for, traditionalists and drag racing, it's sort of like the US Nationals, just for the sheer amount of volume of what you're gonna see.
Exactly. I mean, and you're seeing people from all over the world,
Oh
not
yeah.
just the United States. People are importing their cars to this event. You know what I mean? It's crazy. And I mean, kudos to them. They found something that, the car culture needed, and they're, building on it. So that's it. Like, from a marketing standpoint, it's a great thing.
It kind of really, for me, shows off how ingenuitive and determined drag racers are. Because you get the teams from come over from Puerto Rico, and I saw one year I was walking through the pits. I'm like, why is there a container truck here? Your ships overseas, yada yada yada. I look inside it, and there's like two or three 4-post lifts inside it with 6 cars inside the trailer, and that's how they got them from here from Puerto Rico.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's hardcore right there. When you want to make a race, you put your stuff in a container ship and send it out that way. That was
Yeah.
impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta have a lot of faith in your container, first of all, because carrying your race car and just to ship it overseas is just, it's crazy, but that's what they want to do. But that's the thing is like going back to what I said, it's like you gotta have a respect for everyone. Like, we all have this bug inside of us that we want to go down the racetrack as fast as we can, no matter what kind of car, what kind of dragster, what kind of funny car, what kind of anything. Like, we just want to go down the track and hit the gas.
Oh yeah, I tell people, what do you do for a living? I say I take money and horsepower and make poor decisions.
Yes.
I'm like,
Yes. I do the same.
racers are people who hate money and spare time. Doesn't matter what kind of racing you're doing, you hate those two things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's always something to be done on a race car.
Oh yeah, it's and it, it It depends on your level of dedication and what you're going to do, because a certain level of bracket cars don't require the same amount of maintenance as what other vehicles do. And as you go up the scale of intensity on a vehicle, the level of what you have to do jumps exponentially.
Yes,
And
most definitely. But it, regardless of what they have to do in between rounds or in between runs, I mean, you're still out there. You're still participating. You're still contributing to the culture.
yeah. And let's talk about kind of what you bang the loud pedal on in the alcohol ranks. And I've the more since I started really working in the industry full time, I've grown to absolutely love the alcohol drag. I call them still call them alcohol dragster and funny car classes, because it's the people that are they're dedicated sportsman professional types that it's for the love and it's what they want to do. And what's it like for you to kind of battle it out in the in that very competitive class?
Yeah, the class itself, there's so many different personalities amongst everything, and so that's the biggest thing is just being a part of that is like I love it, obviously, because I'm still racing in it, but it just you gotta learn how to do anything, you gotta learn how the other person stages the car and how the other person markets their car, because whatever they're doing, it's going to help the class. It might not be helping you specifically, but it's still going to be helping the class. And so just to be among them, you know what I mean? It just like, wow, like I'm there, you know? So that's like the biggest thing. But oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and kind of, you told me something I didn't realize about you. Let our listeners know, how did you exactly, get into this? Because a lot of racers in the class go from, to juniors to brackets to maybe like a dot 90, like a super gas, super comp, maybe like top sportsman. And you kind of you took a very direct approach.
Yeah, so the whole thing was, the junior dragster thing, it was starting to really gain momentum when I was 8 years old, right? Of course, you had to wait till you're eight to hit the gas in a junior dragster. And so I kept telling my parents, I'm like, this is what I want to do. And we went out to the junior dragster races, and we even went and watched Stephen Densham, because Gary Densham and my dad were good friends. So we actually went out and watched his son, Steven, drive a junior dragster. And so it just like, it was a big thing. And I'm like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And I was so psyched for it. And then unfortunately, my dad passed away. And just from that, I never got to it. And I never got to do it. Just, it wasn't going to work out with my mom and I trying to do a junior dragster. So I had to wait and wait. And of course, I knew this is what I wanted to do, but I just didn't know how I was going to do it. I'm like, man, how am I going to get into a top fuel car? How am I going to get down the racetrack? And so every year, I tell my parents, I'm like, I want to have a dragster for Christmas, because they always ask you, like, what do you want for Christmas? And I always say a race car. And so finally, gosh, I was a senior in high school, and I was starting to really think about, okay, I got to go to Frank Holly's, or I got to try and find a car to get into. And we met Rick McDonald, who he was over on the Nostalgia cackle cars. And so I warmed up a cackle car for him at a car show out at the Fairplex. And he said, you would be great to drive my race car. And lo and behold, he had a 760 front engine dragster. It was blue. And it was like this crazy wheel standing thing, right? And I asked my mom, and she said, yeah, but you're gonna have to ask your grandpa. I'm like, of course, I'm gonna have to ask my grandpa. So I like begged with him. I'm like, grandpa, can I get into this race car? Like, would you give me your blessing? And he's like, well, you gotta wait till you graduate. So I graduated high school, and I finally got to get my license in the 760 car. And so I did. And let me tell you, there's some pictures out there of me doing like 3 feet wheel stands from the starting line to the 60-foot cone. Like, it was just like a wild beast. Like, I never thought I would be driving that. And then, I drove that a couple of years during the summer because I couldn't drive during school. That was the deal. And so, gosh, 4 years ago now, I was in Charlotte and I was working with Paul Lee, and he was driving the Lagana Stewart funny car. And so we're at a rain delay. We're just kind of sitting there. And I get this text from Jake Sanders, who his dad is Mark Sanders, who's Mr. Explosive Nostalgia Funny Car. And he's like, "Hey, weird question. Do you have any nail polish?" And I just so happened to have my makeup bag with me, and I had some nail polish. I said, "Yeah." He's like, "Can you come down to the pit?" So I walked down there, and I met Anthony DeCero and his then 3-year-old daughter, Colette. Well, apparently Colette was helping fill the nitro, and of course, once you dunk your hand in nitro, everything comes off. So her fingernail polish came off. So I sat there and I painted her nails for her, and that was the step to literally a 3-year-old and nail polish is how I got into an A-fuel car.
That's kind of wild.
Right? Like, kind of just out of the blue. And so Anthony had the Nitro University where he would license different people, all kinds of students. You can learn how to drive the car, you can learn how to work on the car. And so we started talking, and over the last couple or a couple months went by, and he said, "Why don't you come get your license?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, a nitro car. And it's a like just like my grandpa's car, you know?" And I was like freaking out. So of course I had to ask him. I'm like, "Grandpa, can I get into this car? Do you think you can do it? Do you think you'd come down and sign my license?" And he's like, "All right." Mind you, I'm in my last semester of college, and I finished college in 3 years because I knew I had to finish college to drive a race car. So I was like, hell bent to get it done. And so I went out to the Indy test session, made my 3 runs. My grandpa signed my license, and I graduated college that December. And in February, I made my debut in the alcohol ranks.
That's a wild
So.
story for sure.
Yeah, it's it's not the prim and proper, same old story that everyone else has. Like, it was different. But then again, I'm kind of a different person, so it worked for what I was doing.
Yeah, and I think that that's the cool thing about all forms of, with drag racers is we all take the similar path, I think, is that it's usually a family member that gets us involved at, at point A, at ground zero. And then how we get to wherever we are or the future state, there's so many different roads, roundabouts, turnarounds, missed exits, new opportunities that come up. And I think that's a yeah, that's definitely one of the more interesting ones I've heard for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, I worked so hard during college to get my work done just because I knew what was out there. And so like I had the motivation to do it. And it was just pure luck that I met Anthony and his daughter Colette, that weekend in Charlotte. So it's crazy how it came about, but now now Anthony and I are partners, and we race together and work together, and it's been a great relationship so far.
And kind of swinging back into what we were talking about, with the alcohol ranks, and just from I always like to kind of look at things from the what I call the catbird seat or the cat's eye seat, being up high here in media world, and getting to kind of look at things from a different perspective, is that within both classes, but particularly the dragsters, it was funny you mentioned personalities. There are so it's such an interesting group of people that you see in that class, everywhere from doctors to track owners to just people within the industry, people that homemade crews, and then you have the difference of the cars is it just it really to me it's a lot of fun to watch the class and see the raw emotion of those that participate in it.
Yeah, it's like you said, like all of our cars are unique. Like, there's not one car that looks the same, not one car that has the same paint scheme, not one car that has the same motor combination. You know, it's like we still have such a huge opportunity to express ourselves, not only like through our personalities, but we also express ourselves through our race cars. You know, so just like you said, we have, there's like, gosh, I think I said there's like six young women in their 20s, and we're all out here battling it out. Like, no other sport or no other motorsport has that. And it's like, you, granted, maybe we're a little crazy because we keep doing it, but like, you get these six women, and we're so passionate about this sport and about these cars that, you know, yeah, it's a lot of work to get the car up there at the line, but once you hit the gas, it's all worth it.
And, you know, that was something I was going to kind of touch on too, is that, you know, currently the alcohol dragster class has probably the highest level of diversity outside of maybe pro stock bike as far as male to female drivers. And it's not, you know, there isn't what I would say a big performance disparage. You know, Megan won the title this year, and it's, you know, it's pretty wild to see that level of competition in a class and that level of diversity, and you can't sleep on anybody in the class, and you know, it's really awesome to see.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the alcohol dragster, our cars are so close together now that you have to be a machine on the starting line. Like, you have to get that number down. And I mean, look at Megan. She had a great year and she won multiple times. And, you know, she's normally one of the first people to leave off the starting line. And of course, that Randy Meyer tune-up doesn't help or helps too, you know? So, but yeah, I'm really proud to be in a class where, you know, all of us are able to battle it out. Like, we're all able to bring something to the table, and everything that we bring to the table, we're able to use that as our arsenal when we're out there at the track. And we might all be friends outside the car, but literally, I know it's cliche, but literally, once the helmet goes on, like, I don't care who I'm racing. Like, I'm gonna get to the finish line first.
Nobody has any friends when there's three bulbs lit.
Exactly. And it, that but that's the beauty of the sport. I mean, we could go head to head and try to go for each other's throats on the starting line, but once we get out to the top end, I mean, especially the ladies of the sport, we always get out and give each other a hug. I know that's very girly, but I mean, that's what it is. And like, we're all smiles at the top end, like, oh, hey, that was a great run. Like, I'm like, good luck next round or whatever it may be. But I think that also talks about the respect that everyone has for each other.
And
Like, everyone knows that we're out there trying to kill it, and it's a good journey to be with like-minded people.
it going off the respect thing, the other thing that when you think about it too is with the level of professionalism that you see in the alcohol ranks, and you know, just with the injected cars, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, isn't there a few different combinations you guys can use with those engines, kind of, you know, playing with the rules?
There's a little bit. I mean, like I said, everyone has their kind of their own twist on it, and a lot of people, they change, not that the tune-up changes, but where they tune up is different. You know, it could either be someone's really strong in the bell housing or someone's really strong on the motor part. You know, so everyone, there's not just one way to tune these cars.
You know,
Like, there's different ways to get to the same result.
different ways even with ejector cars, and you have the screw blower cars, which I love screw blower cars. They're loud, angry, and violent and vicious. And
Oh, believe me, they're crazy when you're standing there in the starting line on the other lane.
I could only, you know,
Because
just
all you hear is blower.
yes, you know, from the media perspective, you know, we don't have a helmet on to help shield us besides earplugs, so we, you know, we get the full sensory experience of having every ounce of you shaked, and then you get to throw the injected nitro car, you know, rocketing down the track too. And it's again, that's what I think makes the alcohol, you know, the dragster class so cool, is you can have those two different kind of vehicles, you know, kind of mixed into one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a show for the fans. Like, we got to remember that we are trying to put on a show for our sponsors and our fans. So Like to have the two different cars is just one of the elements that NHRA has that they can market on. Like, hey, look at these two different cars. Like, yeah, they're different setups, but they're running the same numbers. And so for the engineers and the tech people out there, like, I know that a lot of people come up and ask a lot of technical questions. They're like, because sometimes they just don't understand, well, how come you run nitro and he runs alcohol, but you guys are running the same thing? I got, then I go through the whole thing. I'm like, oh, well, since they have the blower on there, they have forced air coming through there. And, you know, a couple different things throughout the class that change. But yeah, I mean, it's fun. Believe me, it gets loud up on the starting line. Like once they start revving up the car to stage the to go in for staging, it's hard to hear your car too. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, I was very fortunate, back at the NHR or the NMCA Norwalk event. Craig Sullivan let me, do a video where I got this, experience sitting inside a screw blown Pro Mod, and he just fired the car up with me sitting there. Didn't, whack the throttle, but just sitting inside that screw blown car idling, it just like. Literally, when people say, "Oh, it shakes you," that is no freaking joke. It's just like you're surrounded by this like aura of awesomeness, and it's and that violence and that power. And I couldn't imagine, having that, control underneath my foot to be able to do something like that. And then plus the sound that hits you at full throttle.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because like yeah, the screw rollers have that sound and that loudness that all drag racing fans like to hear. But on like as a driver perspective, like I love my car because the second I'm ready to stage the car and I pull the car on the high side and drop the clutch, and you're literally holding this 4,000 horsepower car with your right hand, like. Your right hand is holding the whole car. Like it's just it's crazy. And it's like once you drop that clutch and now the car wants to go. Like it just wants to, of course, because we have the centrifugal clutch. And so now you're like you have everything you can keep the car back until the, you know, 4 tenths of a second on that yellow light and you hit the gas.
Yeah, it's a different sensation with those cars, I'm sure, because it just wants to pull, 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 and pull as hard as it can, like a little it's like a 4,000 pound puppy or 4,000 horsepower puppy.
Yep, exactly. That's a good analogy. I like that. It's just like walking a dog.
Except the dog's trying to go, almost 300 miles an hour and trying to kill
Hey, you
you.
know, it's little things, but you know, it's like a dog walking a dog.
Yeah. Literally all over the place. And then the other cool thing I like about the nitro cars is like the calm before the storm you get. Whereas the blower cars go up on the chip, the nitro cars, the way they just kind of hunker down, that sound, when something's about to happen because you just hear that low kind of idle kick, and it's like it makes the hair stand up on your neck because it's about to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, just like I've had many a times where I'm in the seat and I've had many a times where I'm outside the seat teaching someone new through the Nitro University. And like, you know, I'm teaching these people how to drive the car. And so of course I'm standing there and I'm hoping they remember what I told them, you know, as they hit the gas. But I mean, the second they pull it on the high side and drop that clutch, it's like, all right, game on. Like this is what we come for. That split second right there. What like right before you're ready to hit the gas and you're mentally getting yourself squared away, you're like, okay, I'm here to do a job. Keep the car straight. Make sure you shut it off at a certain time if your crew chief says so. And so there's a million things going through your head like in that split second before I roll it in to stage the car. But that's what you live for.
From a crew's perspective, I have people all the time be like, "Oh, I was waving at you when you guys are on the starting line." I was like, "When you're either driving or you're helping on a car, when you're up there, everything else around you is there, but it's a blur because you have a job to do. It's programmed in what you're going to do, and it's a similar situation. You see some of these turbo radial cars kind of. They're building boost and getting ready to go in. From the crew perspective, when you start to see that car's rear end kind of rise up and it's on the chip and it's popping and banging, that it's time to go, and you're thinking, did I do everything I need to do? And it's a very, very, like, all-encompassing, very, fulfilling moment when all of that happens. The adrenaline is just unreal.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the best things. I mean, so this year I actually got the opportunity to go do the clutch on my grandpa's car in St. Louis. And it's like, you're the one that put all that together, and like to watch it come to life and push him through the water box to do his burnout. I'm like, man, I hope the clutch is right. But on the other hand, it's like that, it's so cool. Like, and like you said, if you're a crew person or you're even driving, like everything else is gone in the world. Like, you are just there to accomplish one thing and to execute it perfectly.
Yeah, it's you're there to do you're there to do a job. And on I'm kind of curious, for what you own your own operation now, and do you do you are you the kind of driver that just goes back and looks at the data, or are you there spinning wrenches with the team? What's it like kind of being an owner driver now?
So it definitely the owner driver combination that I've endured or put myself through this year. I've definitely learned a lot. I mean, it's quite phenomenal what it takes to run these cars even before you start the car up, But yeah, usually we go out there, I make my run, and it depends if who's at the track with me, but a lot of the time I'm right there with the crew. And I'm, taking spark plugs out, draining the fuel and putting fresh fuel in, and I'm helping, and I want to see what went wrong, because as I'm doing that, I'm telling Anthony DeCiro, who's my crew chief, like, hey, about 800 foot, I felt this wobble behind me, and I wasn't sure what it was. And so he's like, okay, let's go check the computer, and sure enough, we can see, like, oh yeah, like that right at that time you dropped a hole or something, whatever it may be. So I'm kind of doing both. And so, especially as an owner, I get asked a lot of questions on the tune-up. Not necessarily what I think, but he gives me like two options. He's like, well, we can either play it safe and we know that it can go down the track, or you have the potential of hurting some parts, but we're going to go really fast. It's like, well, it depends on what you have that weekend. And so, I mean, it's been to the point where we're in the water box and he looks at me, he's like, okay, should I leave it the way it is or should we change it? I'm like, nope, let's leave it. Let's try and send it. Because that's what you're doing. You're trying to especially in qualifying, you're literally racing against yourself. You're just trying to build on the runs you've made before. And so, I mean, but how are you going to know unless you take that chance? And
Oh,
so
yeah.
it's a fine line. But then again, you're like, well, I don't want to, blow up my head again. Because I've done it a few times this year, or this weekend, one of the sponsor checks didn't come through yet. So it's like I'm go like you know it's a lot of going back and forth in my head. A lot of times I'm standing there, like literally I'll be thinking of something and I'm looking at the car and there's people at the ropes that are trying to get my attention, and I'm literally just like, okay, what do I do? And they're like, Krista, Krista. And finally I look up and I see them waving. I walk over and they're like, we're trying to wave at you for 5 minutes. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm having the owner driver dispute in my head right now. And I'm trying to outweigh each option. But it's a unique place to be in. And yes, it's very stressful. And a lot of my friends that are not total racers, but they know what I do. They're like, why do you stress yourself out? And I'm like, it's the name of the game. Like, that's what we came here to do. I know it sounds crazy, but it's the name of the game. And but I wouldn't change it for a world, that's for sure.
You can just tell them because I have a devil on one shoulder that's telling me to drive over the crank to win, and the angel on the other shoulder that's signing the check says, please don't do that.
Yep, that's exactly what happens. And it's like even within the split second of me smoking the tires or there's a shake, it's like then you got to decide, okay, am I going to slap it or am I going to, coast off and wait for the next qualifying pass? So it's the same thing as like that's very driver to driver, but I want to make sure that I can run fast, but I also have to do it within my means.
Do I want to be John Force, a la when he was first winning championships and, upside down and on fire every weekend? Or do I want to be John Force now that runs an empire? There's two very different John Forces.
Exactly. And it's like I said, it's a fine line that you have to go back and forth on, but it's something that only a select number of people get to do. And I'm fortunate to be one of them.
Yeah, and again, it's something that people just don't, it's hard to like quantify to those that don't experience when you're actually in the trenches with one of these cars and what all goes into it and what you put into it. Like you said, turning the wrenches and, did I do this? Did I do that? Oh, by the way, now you got to roll and do the burnout. That, it's very, you're not necessarily changing hats. You have like just all the different hats stacked on your head at one time.
Exactly, especially in that one moment. Now it gets extra spicy when Paul Lee is racing his Nitro Funny Car and my grandpa is racing his Top Fuel Dragster all in the same weekend. Now that is a hat changer right there.
Yeah, that's probably a whole lot going on there for sure.
Oh yeah, like I am literally running around in my fire suit trying to make sure everything's put together because not only am I the creative director on the McLeod and FTI side, but I also am a general manager over on Paul's race team. And so, you just got to make sure all of those guys are taken care of, make sure everything's like Paul has the right sponsor shirt on and he's doing the right shout outs and make sure he's good to go. And, and then it's like, of course, my grandpa, I mean, I honestly get nervous watching him go down the racetrack just because he's my grandpa, but I'm sure it's opposite for him. Like, he gets nervous when I go down the track. It's just because we're family. But, you gotta, like, okay, now we're in Top Fuel. So he has to run this number to qualify. Okay. And then I double check, I do look through, make sure all the lines are tight. And I look at his parachutes, make sure the pins are out and the wheelie bar's set. I just, little things. I'm like, oh, did someone look at that? Oh, did someone look at that? Oh, did someone look at that? And it just keeps going through your head.
Yeah, and like you said, it's very hard for people to understand and explain, let alone with one car. But I couldn't imagine, dealing with multiple car, multiple different vehicles. Plus, oh, by the way, now you got to go jump in your car, and you have to trust and your crew did their job there. And it gets to the point where you almost have to just kind of, let go and, understand that hoping that everybody did their job and just, only take care of the things that are within your power.
Exactly. You gotta trust your crew. But there's one instance where I was literally dragging my car up to the staging lanes and I can see Paul's pit from the staging lanes and they're warming up the car. I literally got out of my car, ran over in my fire suit, took a picture, tweeted it for Paul, ran back to my car, put my stuff on and got in the car. I've had some crazy times, but like I said, I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, what else would I be doing?
Yeah, no, that's I worked in the legal industry for 10 plus years, and I look back now, I'm like, how did I even survive that long?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's change gears here a little bit and, maybe take you out of your comfort zone a little bit and ask some fun questions here. So, you said you're all about the nitro life, and there's some racers that, they're very singular in what they want to do. And then you get the racers where if it's got tires and it might have a steering wheel, they're going to jump in it and run. What could you maybe see? What other vehicle, first off, could you see yourself racing?
I mean,
Vehicle class, whatever.
I definitely have a thing for pro mods. Now, would I get in it? Maybe if the opportunity came to me. Am I gonna seek out a life into it? Probably not, but I have mad respect for those guys. I mean, pro mods on, either end of the spectrum, because, of course you go through the different class or different organizations and pro mod means different. But when they say pro mod, it's like the top of the top of the street car. You know what I mean? And it's like short wheelbase, crazy motor, and you're either going an eighth mile or the quarter mile. Doesn't matter. You still have to wheel that thing. You
Yeah.
gotta have some skill.
Yeah, there is no such thing as an uneventful pro mod pass, period.
Exactly. And it's just, I mean, gosh, I'm trying to think of that race. I think it was Topeka where there was like four pro mods in a row that crashed. Like, it just, like, I could just imagine like sitting in the car and you're the fifth pair and four of the five pairs ahead of you crashed.
Yeah.
Like, what's going through your head right now? You know what I mean? Like, are you sure you want to be in here? But they're crazy. And like I said, they have respect for the car and they have some skill that I do not possess. And yeah, I got to give it up to them.
I can tell you exactly what's going through that fifth pair's mind. Man, those guys are screwing up. That's not going to happen to me. I can drive better than that. There's something
Yeah,
wrong with them.
exactly. Exactly.
It doesn't even enter their mind that they're about to take a 5,000 horsepower door car and try to go almost 280 miles an hour. It's like, yeah, that's
Yeah, in a straight line. Yeah, it's easy.
straight-ish line.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like now going into the FTI side that I'm doing, I got to hang out with Todd Tutterell
Oh yeah, good
over at
people.
SEMA, and it's just like I'm like, you're crazy. And then he's looking at me, he's like, no, you're crazy. I'm like, no, my car goes straight, yours does not go straight.
Yeah. They go, yeah, if it goes straight, it goes slow. Now, you've said something. All right, you give it a shot. What's one vehicle you look at and you're like, that's a whole big bunch pile of nope that I'm not getting anywhere near.
Nitro Harley,
Yeah, I
like
think we talked about that.
no,
Yeah.
no. Like I like my little cage around me, and I like my fire suit, and I like my helmet. Like I like to be safe, and I'm like strapped to something, not like just out in the middle of nowhere
And
with nothing around me.
you're not putting on a ballistic vest.
Yeah, there, you know, it says something when they have to start the bike with the rider off of it, then the rider gets on. Like, you know, shouldn't it be safe enough that you just get on the car or on the bike, you know? So, yeah,
Yeah,
they're nuts.
that's a whole different breed of cat with those dudes that do that, and they just, it's like they're completely oblivious to the level of insanity that they participate in.
Absolutely. I mean, I would not be able to do
No,
it.
not at all. Like I said, it's one of those things I'm like, man, that's amazing. Don't want to do it.
Nope. I'll
Now,
watch them, absolutely, but
yeah, it's sort of like you got that one friend that thinks they can dance after a couple drinks, and you just keep shoveling more drinks. Yeah, you keep having fun. I'm just gonna stay at a safe
I'll stand
distance.
over here. Yeah. You know what? I'll stand on the in the grandstands just 'cause I don't know what's going to happen. So I can see the
Yeah, exactly.
whole
It's funny, kind of speaking of, not what's gonna, know what's gonna happen. Then you get into the, where I spend a lot of my time is in the, the outlaw small tire radial stuff, and even a lot more no prep stuff. And that kind of, harkens back to those days of people lining the fence because they don't know what's gonna happen next. What's your take on that whole scene?
I mean, first of all, I'm a marketing person, and you guys all know that. And just how they market themselves, like on other avenues, amazing. They literally went to an untapped market and tapped into it. So they're doing something right. And like small tire stuff, like I said, I have all the respect. You want to go down the racetrack? Awesome, because we all at one point we take that danger of our lives in our hands just to seek the thrill of going down the racetrack. And so, but the cool part about the small tire and the outlaw stuff and the no prep, it's like there you can have any kind of car, which I think that's pretty special. Is like that's literally, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, that mentality of run what you brunk. Like these cars are coming out of garages out of nowhere, you know, and they're trying to run with the pros or with the big shots of the class, and I give them props for it.
It's very much too, you know, those guys walk the walk and talk the talk. They are, you know, outlaws to the T. And it's funny, you know, the whole dust up between Torrance and Cameron, you know, to a lot of those guys, you know, that's nothing. You know, I've heard the stories and the rumors of fights breaking out at different points, and you know, they get pretty heated, and you know, they definitely they do things that a lot of racers look at and it's they like to watch, but they definitely are in awe of being able to take, you know, thousands of horsepower and slap it down to a 275 radial.
Yeah, I mean, like you said with the Cameron and Steve thing, yeah, that was huge in art in the professional ranks, you know, because you're supposed to be a professional. But to them, it's like no big deal. Because I've seen some fights on Facebook where they like get out the top end and they start throwing punches, like real punches, you know? And I'm like, ooh, okay. But that's also feeding into the passion behind it. Like, why would you get out the top end with your car and you want to throw a punch at someone? You know, it just feeds into the passion of it.
Oh yeah, it's like dirt track racing. You know, that's you know, I've seen fights between the drivers' wives at dirt track racing that were more intense than, you know, Steven Cameron's shoving match. You know,
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, it just, but that's the thing. It's like, it's such, not that it's voodoo in the professional ranks. It's just, but it's a lot more grassroots. You know what I
yeah,
mean? And
it's
so
something you don't normally
maybe
see.
you don't normally see it. Now, the Steven Cameron thing, I think it did wonders for the sport. Just because it, like, you know, it added some like craziness and, you know, you got to see the world champion come down to his lowest, but then you see Cameron come around and show the professionalism of his program, you know, like after, on that last interview. And so, like, I think it was great. Like, it was great entertainment.
And I mark it down right now. Anytime those two teams line up, you know people are going to be talking about it. It's going to be a point of contention. People are going to
Oh,
tune in.
yeah.
They're like, oh, I want to see what's going to happen this time. You know, who's going to win? You know, are they going to shake hands? You know, it was kind of raw to start with, but from the marketing and from the sports point of view, you know, it gives it a little bit more of an edge. You know, it makes, you know, Steve's the villain now, and you know, it makes it just that it adds another layer for people to check out.
Exactly. I mean, and we got to remember that, yes, we're here to race out of passion, but we're also like an entertainment aspect for a lot of people. And a lot of people live vicariously through us because we get to drive these race cars. And so, like you said, it like even through a qualifying run, if those two match up, you know something's gonna go down.
Oh, people seem to forget, you know, the little scuffle between a couple of pro stock teams that happened in the pits, the John Force versus Don Schumacher drama, John Force versus the Petragons, you know, John Force versus the guy that used to drive the WWF funny car, big dude. What was his name? Oh, I
Oh gosh, excuse us.
no, not Scusa,
Was it
the
not excuse us?
big guy.
Oh God, I can
Back in
see
the
his
nice.
face.
Yeah, I can see his face, you know, just with him or, you know, Whit Bazemore. I mean, it's not uncommon. It's just people have a short memory and they seem to forget about that this has happened before.
Exactly. I mean, it is what it is, and it happened. And like I said, I think Cameron held himself very respectfully. And but now, like, people know Cameron's for real. Like, he's like, I'm not gonna take that, you know? And it's like, it gave Cameron, I mean, if you were in the grandstands, like, as Cameron was coming down the return road at Pomona, you would have never thought you were at a drag race. Like, every single person was up clapping their hands for Cameron. And it was remarkable. Like it was almost like he won the race.
Oh yeah.
Everyone was standing up, and I was in the stands. I was up at 2424, and it like I was amazed. Like, I'm like, oh my God, like I've never seen the fans react to something like that. And that's what you got to tap into. You got to find something where the fans, like, they want to react and they want to weigh in their opinion, you know?
Oh yeah, that's definitely, you know, what you want to see for sure. And to kind of close things out here a little bit, you know, for heard it through the grapevine that Paul's going to have some interesting stuff going on in 2020 with his racing. Can you provide any details to us on what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, Paul is super excited to be back. The eight races this year, I think it really showed that we are contender with one of the top teams. I mean, we ran some of the best runs of the rounds was with our car. And so, but Paul's working on a few deals. Right now, we have about 16 races locked in, ready to go. So we're just looking for a little bit more for the last eight, and we're trying to be a full-time car. And so if it's going to be a full-time car, and you know, you got Jim Oberhoffer, and then Jimmo's talking with Ron Tobler, because we kind of partnered up with the Tobler and the Caps car. It's going to be big. It's going to be super big, and I'm so excited, and I'm so proud of Paul for, you know, coming from a Widowmaker heart attack nearly 3 years ago to the day, to now owning his own operation. And we're going to go out, and you know, the end goal is to win a championship. So it's exciting. I am, as a fan, I'm stoked, because you got to remember, I am a fan through and through. I
Yeah.
love drag racing, and I love watching it as much as participating in it. But to be able to be on this team is such an honor, and I'm so grateful that Paul gave me this position, and I'm able to help him out with his program. I'm super excited.
Well, you know, you arm yourself with like-minded people that have passion, and it's people like us that are willing to walk through hell to make a race car go down the track. That's the only way to put it, really.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been at the track since till 2 in the morning, and it's an 8 a.m. call time. Like, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
There's nothing else about it.
You know, it's it, y your level of dedication is high when you've debated on, do I just want to sleep under the car since I've got to be back here so early? You know, what's the point of going to the
Absolutely.
hotel?
Absolutely. I've debated that a few times.
Which is why I'm a huge advocate of at least having a tent, or if you have a motor home, to use that at the track. Game
Yeah, something.
changer.
We have the semi, so I have like a little bunk in the semi, so you know, just in case.
Yeah, that's why I tell people, I said, as long as I've got a quasi warm place that keeps me out of the rain, I'm good. I can spend a whole
Yep.
weekend at the track. I can eat, lunch meat sandwiches, slam a Dr. Pepper, and let's put this car in the beams.
Yep, keep on rolling.
Well, Krista, our time here on the Dragzine podcast is coming to a close, and I like to give my guests their ability to tell everybody what's going on, sponsors, who to thank, whatever they want to do, and if they want to, in the best John Force passion, fashion they can. So, I'll turn the floor over to you and let you kind of speak your piece for a moment.
Yeah, I think 2019, like I said, just bringing on that team ownership role really broadened my horizons, and I am very thankful that I'm able to be in the position that I am. And I learned a lot. Like, let me tell you, I learned a lot this year. But that's all key to building to a better 2020. And throughout the PRI show, I got to sit and visit with a lot of my partners, and you know, they're pretty stoked about my program for next year. And so I got to thank McLeod Racing and Paul Lee. He's really been a huge mentor and a huge help in my racing career. And you know, it's been super cool. He's been beyond great to me. And yeah, I think the schedule, I'm going to do about eight races next year in the E-Fuel car, and hopefully you guys will see me in a top fuel car pretty soon.
Nice.
Yep, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like your 2020 is pretty stacked up, and we definitely look forward to seeing you at the track, and thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Krista for stopping by, and as always, may your reaction times be crisp, your wind lights bright, and have a very Merry Christmas.